All right, let's go and get started. The second talk is by my friend and colleague, Robert Leland. He'll be speaking on vibrational gyroscopes in instrumentation and in creation.
Thank you. I'm an engineer, particularly focusing on feedback control systems. And so this is going to be a little bit more of a techie talk. My wife and daughter helped me tone it down a bit, but I did not always follow their advice. This is a warning. I worked on a project about 5 years on vibrational gyroscopes, so that's sort of my expertise. And in that project, we found literature describing vibrational gyroscopes in insects. And that was very interesting, and I wanted to talk about the comparison. On the screen here, on the left-hand side, is a vibrational gyroscope very similar to what's in the iPhone 4. I won't guarantee it's exactly the same one, but someone took apart an iPhone 4, and this is kind of what they saw. Maybe someone else's. On the right-hand side is a crane fly, and you'll see two little structures hang off below the wings, and those are called halteres, and they function as vibrational gyroscopes. Okay, just kind of a perspective slide. Good design is a reflection of a wise designer, and please note the adjectives in there. They're very important. Okay. Even in insects, which are very small, unlike the galaxies, we see that God has created very complex and effective engineering designs. And vibrational gyroscopes are a very good example of this. They illustrate some important aspects of design. First, we see similar structures and functions in biological and electromechanical systems. We see successful integration into a larger, more complex system to accomplish a task. And then finally, something that's not always seen is there's also a detailed process for fabrication or development. Okay, what are vibrational gyroscopes? They use a vibrating structure to measure rotation rate, so there are no spinning parts, so they don't look like this. What they do is they measure rotation rate without reference to anything outside the body. So it's what's called an inertial measurement. This makes them very useful in vehicles such as aircraft and spacecraft. They're also found in things like iPhones, Wii controllers, and in flies. This is a picture of the Cassini satellite, and it uses a vibrational gyroscope called a hemispherical resonator. It looks kind of like a wine glass, and it doesn't spin, it vibrates. It's very expensive. Okay. If we look at a model for a vibrational gyroscope, a good way to look at it is a mask supported by springs, and what we do is we drive the mass to vibrate along one axis. We call that the drive axis. And if this gyroscope is rotating, here would be about an axis coming out of the screen, then there's a Coriolis force, and that will create a vibration along a perpendicular axis here, drawn as vertical, called the sense axis. And we can look at this sense axis vibration and determine the rotation rate. Now, for a more realistic picture, this is a what's called a microelectromechanical system, or a MEMS gyroscope. It's made using similar processes as integrated circuits, and they're very small and they're very inexpensive. And you may notice these combed fingers. Those are used for both driving the masses to vibrate along the drive axis, which I believe is going to be this direction, and then sensing the vibration on the sense axis, which I believe is this direction. This gyroscope was used in anti-lag braking systems to detect yawing or turning of the car in a skid. Okay, back to insects. Insects in the order Diptera have vibrational gyroscopes in them. Now, Diptera insects means that they have two wings instead of four, and this includes things like fruit flies. And the rear wings have been replaced by these posts called halteres. And these halteres will vibrate and function as gyroscopes that measure rotation. And this is a crane fly. We use that a lot because it's larger than most of the flies that do this. Okay, this is a gyroscope designed at the Jet Propulsion Labs at JPL. The one on the left is the first one they designed. And it uses a rocking post that moves very similar to the fly halter. We rock it in one direction, that becomes the drive axis. If the gyroscope is rotating, it also rocks in the other direction, which is the sense axis. And the little cloverleaf structure you see here, underneath that are four electrodes that we use both to drive the rocking motion and to sense it. The little white line here is 1 millimeter to give you an idea of the size of this thing. The picture on the right was a more recent version. The one on the left, someone actually had to glue that post in there, and that's difficult. The one on the right has no assembly required. Okay, at University of Alabama, we developed a similar gyroscope with a rocking post. We use different kinds of sensors called strain sensors. You'll see four little kind of gold squares here. Those are the sensors that sense vibration. And these are formed by depositing and patterning what's called a piezoelectric material on a silicon wafer. Piezoelectrics will generate a voltage or current when stressed or compressed. And what the sensors do is measure strain, which is the fraction that a surface is stressed or compressed. So if you start with something that's, say, 10 inches long and stretch it to 11 inches long, it would have a strain of 1/10. And we can use strain measurements to determine bending, particularly of these supports, and then that will measure the rocking of the post. And I have a little very flexible structure here to illustrate this. You may see these lines. If I bend this, the top line gets longer and the bottom line gets shorter, and we measure that with a strain gauge. In a similar manner, the fly halteres vibrate and the motion is sensed. And the motion is sensed by 5 sensor fields called campaniform sensilla, if I'm pronouncing that right, okay, which sense strain just like the University of Alabama gyroscope. Most of them measure the back and forth motion of the halteres that corresponds to the drive axis. One of those fields measures motion at a right angle to the vibration, and that's the sense axis. And this last sensor field sends signals to the motor neurons of the fly that control the steering muscles. And there's some references to articles on the subject. Okay, God's design in nature achieves a specific survival goals. It's not pointless. The halteres are used in what's called attitude control. They allow the insect to have a shorter body, which makes it more maneuverable and more able to evade predators. Attitude control controls the angles the aircraft is at. It doesn't say where you're going, but it will. There's an angle this way, which is the pitch angle. This is the roll angle, and there's the yaw angle. And attitude control controls those three things. As you get a shorter body, I have 2 aircraft here, and also inexpensive. And as you get a shorter body, you're more maneuverable, but you're also closer to being unstable. So this will represent your typical aircraft, and it flies pretty well. I had to practice that a few times. This has a shorter body. It's easier for it to turn and evade predators. Most fighter aircraft have to do something like that, so they have shorter bodies. I added a little mass on here to accentuate this effect. It's also unstable, so it flies like that. What was found in 1714, I'll read this quote, the critical role of the halter in flight stability was first identified in 1714 by William Durham, who showed that a fly could not remain airborne if its tiny halteres were surgically removed. This is a quote from Michael Dickinson, a 2005 article. So this goes back a long ways. This is the cover of the book by Durham. It's called Physical Theology, or a Demonstration of the Being and Attributes of God from His Works of Creation. And there's a few more after that. It's the substance of 16 sermons preached in 1711 and 1712. And it's 2 volumes, about 900 pages. And if I'm reading this right, this is the cover of the 6th edition. So it must have had some wide circulation at the time. But it goes through insights from science that show God's wisdom and God's glory in nature. The halteres, this is also available on Amazon.com for about $20 to $30, available on Google Books for free. So take your pick. The halteres were identified as gyroscopes around 1938 by Frankel and Pringle. There's actually a more recent article by Pringle in 1948 that's usually one that's cited. And that's where I became familiar with this. Okay. The halteres are also critical in performing rapid direction changes in Drosophila. These flies make rapid 90-degree turns in midair, and these turns are fast. They take about 1/20th of a second. In order to control these turns, the flies need to sense their vibration so they can make and stop that turn. And they use both their vision systems, their eyes, and their halteres. The halteres in general respond faster. The eyes have to process a visual image, and the brain has to process that. That's a complex task. The halteres directly measure rotation. Now, experiments suggest that the visual system of the eyes is used to initiate these turns. Their name is called saccades. Once the fly starts turning, there's nothing in midair to stop it from turning. So it has to do basically a counter turn to stop. And it's moving very fast at that point, so that has to be done quickly, and the halteres are used in ending the turn. At least that's what's suggested. Okay. Another thing we see is that God's design in nature involves complex interconnected systems. Now, in engineering design, complexity is generally not necessarily a good thing. It means it's more expensive. We talked about cost a few times. It means that there's more things that can go wrong. It's harder, you have to put it all together. It took a while to get those iPhones small. So in general, we actually favor simplicity. Successful and efficient and reliable performance of tasks that require complexity is good engineering design. And that's what we see in the insects. Okay, successful flight requires flight control. Again, as a control engineer, I like that. The Wright brothers, what they actually achieved was controlled powered flight, underline the word. It was controlled by Wilbur and Orville using a technique called wing warping. They actually took turns flying the plane. They were brothers and raised right. Other thing you'll notice is that the body of the aircraft is extended. There's nothing actually needs to carry in between, but it's extended to increase stability. Okay, this is a more modern aircraft. This is an experimental aircraft from the 1980s, the FDF-16. It uses a digital flight control system. The pilots don't necessarily like this because it means there's no direct connection from the pilot to the control surfaces. It works. And it's unique in that it can move left or right without banking or turning. It can move up or down without pitching up to climb. And I'll show you a short video of this. To do this, it has to coordinate a large number of control surfaces. There are flaps on the wing and the rudder and the tail. There are canards down here, also used as control surfaces. This is a very short video. This may be a trainer cockpit. There you see it rising without pitching up and moving left and right without turning or banking. And those are fairly difficult maneuvers. That one away. Okay, so we've gone from the Wright brothers to the FDF-16. Now let's look at flies. Flies are capable of incredibly complex maneuvers using their wings and a wide array of sensors. The fly can make complex responses to predators, for example. It has to determine the presence and position of a predator, estimate the time it has to respond, initiate a complex flight sequence, and make large changes in both its direction of motion and its orientation. And this all happens very quickly in about the time it takes to blink your eye. And I'll show you a short video of this. This is from a TEDx Caltech talk from Michael Dickinson.
Same Dickinson that you referenced
earlier. Right. Okay, so here there's a simulated predator off to the right. And you can see the fly approaching it. At some point it recognizes the predator, extends its legs, tilts back, and flies back in the other direction. That is a very complex maneuver. We can't do that.
We and the F-16.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a very complex system, and God's created flies can do that. Okay, insect flight is somewhat more complex than aircraft flight. The wings are swept back and forth. On the forward stroke, the wing is tilted in this way, so it's moving this way, and it forms a vortex or air rotation up here called a leading edge vortex, and this is what actually supplies lift to the wing. When the fly's wing is swept backward, it's swept backward at a different angle, and again, there's a leading edge vortex that causes upward lift to keep the insect in the air. Now, most aircraft wings are airfoils. They don't change angle particularly, and they use a streamlined airflow to create a lower pressure above the wing, and that produces lift. There are some short takeoff and landing aircraft that actually do use vortices, so it is used in some aircraft. Okay, more in detail about the flies. They use two sets of muscles to fly. And they're all about where the arrow is. They use power muscles that move the wings back and forth. And I guess the brain sort of turns that on and off, but as far as the beating control, that's not directly controlled by the brain. That's the muscles are just doing that on their own. And this is a very efficient design because the brain doesn't have to control and say, move this fast and move this far. So you can have a smaller brain that will fit on the fly. There are smaller steering muscles that act much faster. And what these do is actually alter the hinge joints of the wings to create these turns. And it's somewhat a subtle action that has a big effect. The flies also have a large number of sensors. They have antenna that will sense chemicals, also sense wind. Their eyes are extremely fast. They get very low resolution, but they require a lot of images per second. And they're the fastest visual system on Earth. There are some eyes on top of the head called ocelli, little red dots up there if you can see them. And no one really knows what these do. But they're there. There are sensors on the wing. The flies can sense changes and deformations in the shape of the wing. The halteres, we've talked about, sense rotation. And then the brain is about 100,000 neurons. Relatively small, but they're used very efficiently. This is another example of design efficiency. So there's no extra complexity. But insect flight does require a number of complex systems working together properly. And here's another quote from Michael Dickinson. When considering the control of complex aerial behaviors, it is impossible to disentangle the aerodynamics of flapping from the mechanics of the wing hinge, the physiology of the flight muscles, or the properties of sensory motor circuits in the brain. So God's design in nature requires a successful coordination of complex and interconnected systems. Okay, last point we'll make is that God's design in nature includes development and growth mechanisms. We think about the final product, but also there's a mechanism to grow that feature. In MEMS gyroscopes, if we design a MEMS gyroscope, we have to consider both the final product and the process to make it, because the processes are very limited. And there's a slide about MEMS design in general. And if you go to a MEMS designer, they don't think in terms of the final product. You say, well, what do we make? And they say, well, we'll do this layer, this layer, this layer. So they think about these steps where you're depositing layers here of polysilicon and growing silicon dioxide to make this, which is a small motor. And the oxide layers are grown by heating up the wafer. The polysilicon is deposited in pattern using photolithography. There's also some metal deposited here for conductors. And then finally, all the oxide layers in yellow and green are etched away, so this motor is free to turn. So this is the way MEMS designers think. And in fact, the computer design software for these, you basically design this layer, then you design this layer, design this layer. So it's very closely linked to the process. This is a process called MUMS out of North Carolina. There's also a Sandia process in California, which is more expensive. For the flies, the fabrication process is called metamorphosis. So the halteres developed during metamorphosis. They're controlled by a single gene called ultrabothorax, or UBX. And if you deactivate this gene, those halteres become wings instead of halteres. And in the larva, the halteres are represented by flat discs called imaginal discs. And then during metamorphosis, these discs are extended or stretched out, so the center of the disc becomes the end of the halter. And here are our three photos of discs from corresponding to the leg, the halter, and the wing. And I really couldn't tell you which is which. I mean, how might help with that? Okay. But that's the fabrication process, and that also has to be designed. Okay, this is sort of a conclusion slide. Vibrational gyroscopes and Diptera are a critical part of a complex flight system that's designed by God. And I take creation design as a starting point as opposed to a conclusion. Insect flight control systems display really amazing engineering design. They accomplish incredible things. Second point is that God's design in nature involves achieving survival goals. It involves integrating your feature into a larger complex system. It also includes the quote-unquote fabrication process. Insect flight control was recognized as displaying God's wisdom in the early 1700s, long before we had sort of creation-evolution debates. So it's got a long history. And then finally, we need to really lose our negative stereotypes of people who pull the wings off flies. I've quoted the work by Dickinson, but there's like a whole range of researchers. There's people at Max Planck Institute, people at ETA in Europe. They're all doing this, writing about halteres and doing nasty things to flies. I think they interviewed Dickinson at NPR, and they were concerned about whether he hurt their flies or not, and he said he tried not to. But occasionally they'd have to, you know, put them down. So anyway, I would encourage you to check out the TEDx Caltech talk by Michael Dickinson on how flies fly. It is really fascinating. He's a neurobiologist and looks mostly at the nervous system, but it goes into all these details of the fly. They really are amazing. And he talks about his inspiration from Star Trek. Okay. I hope it wasn't too technical, but please, are there any questions?
What's that up in the upper picture?
Upper corner. Okay, this is a small robotic fly. One approach to studying flies is to make little robot flies and see what they do, and then go back and say, well, does their regular fly do that? Paper published in January 2015, hypothesized that the wings of flies can also be used as gyroscopes, and they did that by looking at a robotic fly. I don't think they've tested on an actual fly yet, but that's one approach people take.
Just thinking in terms of halteres, let's say, what would they evolve from? Well, they are wings, and their properties are really just modifications of what wings of flies do anyway, because the wings, the reason they have very little neurological control is they're basically are vibrating at a harmonic frequency.
Right.
And the halteres, being shorter, are going to have a higher frequency, which I assume probably makes them more useful as gyroscopes. So, and I'm not saying your overall conclusion, I mean, your conclusion is great in terms of design, but just to point out that as evolutionists usually look for precursors to something, it seems relatively easy for one pair of the wings to simply be modified into gyroscopes that are more effective. And using the wings for flight probably would greatly interfere with the use of gyroscopes, because they may be doing other things and would give false sensory information in terms of orientation.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Is it that the halteres are you know, evolved from the rear wings? The fact that it's controlled by a single gene means you just have to flip one gene to do it. So that's often brought up.
When you said the vision is fastest. The fastest vision system, how fast is fast? Can you tell me about that?
That I don't actually know. My expertise is vibrational gyroscopes and that insect, so I know a little bit about that, but not so much.
My question is if you can maybe speculate a little bit on, you said that the halteres were discovered to act as gyroscopes around the 30s.
Right.
They were maybe used as inspiration to developing mechanical vibrational gyroscopes in that
That is, in general, that's an approach called biomimicry.
Right.
There have been people trying to do that recently, but in general, I don't think people have done that for the gyroscopes. I think that that literature has been somewhat obscure. I couldn't say for sure.
Sorry, just one more thing. Because you talked about how fast flies see, and I don't remember the number, but that's measured in terms of flicker frequency. Mm-hmm. And just as an estimate, if a fly in this room would not see the lights on continuously because they're actually going on and off, and it would see the lights going on and off. It would not see it as a fused energy.
As a controls guy to another, I'm just curious, when, looking at the biology end of it, have there been attempts to either use like linear or nonlinear models to describe the biology there, or do they even not even come close to scratching the surface yet in terms of our understanding?
That's a good question. The aerodynamics is very nonlinear. You see, as far as the feedback mechanisms in the nervous system, that I don't know. That would be a really interesting problem to approach.
I would imagine there's quite a bit of stakes involved.
It would be interesting, but it'd be difficult.
I think dragonflies don't have halteres; they instead have another set of wings.
Right. A lot of.
How do those two systems compare? Are they comparable or completely different, or what?
That I don't really know. Again, some of the new work saying there might be possible for wings to sense rotation might explain that, but I don't know.
Any other questions? Which means that again, someone I believe that I think, and Dominic will agree with me, that I think it looks like God is also a biophysicist.
Yeah.
Right? And I think it's fascinating to see that how biology works. And I think we have a good designer that has made good things for our benefit. Thank you very much.